Paul, are you there? Or no, that's Andrew. I'm sorry. Y'all look so
similar.
Yeah,
no, guys, it's Paul. I just got back from the Defenders game. How you guys doing?
You sound just like Paul.
Nailed it.
Now talk about your shoes.
Hey, peeps. These are my new running shoes. They are the Ultra 362 throwbacks with the neon green piping.
Perfect.
If only we were recording.
With Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Guys, are y'all familiar with ube?
I am not.
No.
Like, isn't that is that a food?
Yes. So
it's something, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's purple. I was at Trader Joe's earlier this week, and I was having a desire for yogurt pretzels. And so I couldn't find them. And so I asked, you know, one of the ladies who works there, I said, hey, can you point me in the direction of the yogurt pretzels? And she's like, yeah, they're right over here. But have you had the ube yogurt pretzels? And I'm like, I don't know what the hell ube is. And she says, well, ube is a, you know, it's like a sweet potato or a yam. And, you know, it's from Peru. And, you know, it's in a lot of Peruvian desserts and they're fantastic. And she presents to me the ube pretzels, which, you know, to your point, Paul, are purple. And I said, OK. And I said, I'll give these a shot. And she's like, great. And then you've got to have the ube pancakes. And she starts running down all of these different ube things. And I said, I can tell you're very excited about ube and that I am missing out on the ube experience, but I'm going to just put my toe in the water with the ube pretzels. I'll come back if I need the other ube. But I mean, she was like, you know, selling Scientology or something. I mean, it's a whole cult of ube over there at the Trader Joe's. Be warned. That's all I'm saying. Be warned.
So did you try? Ube is big. The reason I knew, like, the purple, like, right off the bat is because ube is really big in this area because we have a pretty heavy Filipino population out here in Tidewater, Virginia. And it is in a lot of Filipino, like, desserts and not just desserts, but also, like, food and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And it was fine.
It's high. Yeah. I mean, it's not as good as a chocolate pretzel.
Yeah. No, I was like, okay. I guess this is okay. You know, I don't hate it, but you know, I didn't understand the wild desire. And so I went and looked it up online because I'm like, you know, maybe this is like, you know, some kind of miracle food, but, no, it's not doing anything miraculous.
It's not helping your prostate or anything.
That's right.
It's just there.
yeah, it's just a different food. You know, it's purple sweet potato. So interesting. Anyway, I just wanted to, you know, I figured this is information that we can share with the masses of listeners that we have to educate them about ube. Because
welcome to ube with Aaron and Polly.
I like it. Today, ube pretzels. We can make it a whole ASMR thing, Paul. Where we crunch, you know, the pretzels and crunch, crunch, crunch.
She saw you coming a mile away. Oh, it's my God. A-Rod from the internet. I'm gonna sell this to him, and then he'll talk about it on a podcast.
That's right. That's what they do.
That's how they get in your home.
They recruit podcasters. That's exactly what it is. It's that whole Trader Joe's ube cult.
Least exciting cult ever.
Well, I hate to bring the conversation down, gentlemen.
Yeah.
From ube?
from Ube. Really, does it get better than Ube, according to that lady at the Sam's Club?
Oh, well, no. According to her, no.
Trader Joe's. So I was online the other day, and so Godzilla Minus One. I saw Godzilla Minus One in the theaters. It's a glorious, fantastic movie. Really loved it. Looking forward to its home video release.
I have been aching to see it.
Well, and I knew it was already available digitally overseas, like in Japan. And, you know, okay, that's fine. It was also, the movie was also released in Japan first. Whatever, right? But then last night I saw on there's a director, Garrett Evans. He's directed films like The Raid and The Raid 2 and a couple of other flicks. He posted an image of a 4K Blu-ray edition of Godzilla Minus One released as well. So not only do we have the digital release, we have the physical release available in Japan, and still no release of, I mean, besides the limited theatrical release in America. I looked it up before we started podcasting. I'm like, hey, when is that actually coming out? Because I would like to see it again, and I'd like to see the minus color version.
And
some of the let me just read you some articles, some article titles, right? Godzilla Minus One is becoming a piracy magnet, new data reveals. Godzilla Minus One attracting a monstrous level of privacy. Godzilla Minus One piracy was inevitable, but everyone is to blame.
I blame myself.
So real quick, I want to clarify. So the black and white edition comes with the Blu-ray?
I can't tell if it does. I would love it if it did.
I would hope so. I hope so bad. Same. I will pay more for that to get both versions in one box.
Well, I have been tremendously frustrated that, you know, not only is it not available currently, but that there's not a real published date as to when it's going to be available. You know, either streaming or 4K, what have you. But I've been going like every week, you know, searching Amazon to see if there's, you know, any pre-order out there or anything like that. And last night I, you know, did my little Godzilla Minus One search before I sat down to have my cigar and watch a movie. And it was there. And it was available to rent or buy. And so I bought it. And I immediately, I mean, I'm hunkered down. I'm like, oh man, I can't wait. This is going to be fantastic. And so I hunker down. I start streaming it. Now, I haven't seen this movie, right? But I am startled that, you know, it opens up with a white guy, you know, and there's no dialogue, you know, but I'm like, wow, I'm surprised that, you know, the first character I see isn't Japanese, but, you know, it's this Caucasian guy and no dialogue moves. And he's just had a bad dream about war. And then it cuts to another scene, and it is a white woman and a white man, and they're speaking English. And I'm like,
what are you watching?
Well, and I'm like, the total fuck is this? I mean, I'm like, you know, you would think that there would be something here, you know, with Japanese actors and, you know, perhaps the Japanese language. And I cut back, and it's not Godzilla Minus One that I'm watching. It's a movie called Minus One.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, as you're describing that, I'm expecting it to be some ripoff movie trying to, you know, take the name, but it wasn't even that.
And I think the confusion's intentional because the show artwork for it is just all the awards that it's won. Right. It's not, you know, anything depicting a character or a scene. It's just look at all the awards. And, you know, Godzilla Minus One won a lot of, you know, international awards. And I'm like, oh, this must be it, because it came up as the first choice. And I just got so excited. And so I got to fight the battle with Amazon this morning. Like, you've got to refund this because I'm never going to watch this movie.
Oh, you didn't carry on and watch it last night?
No, I was enraged at you know, my mistake, obviously, but you know, I'm just like, please, I just want to see Godzilla Minus One. Why is it taking so long?
Well, at least Paul? It wasn't a movie named like that to catch them, because it was made in 2010, but I'm sure they marketed like that.
That's even worse.
I feel like it's I feel like the way they have the artwork set in Amazon, though, is intentional, because like what came up on the screen was just the awards that it's won. I mean, that's what I feel like was manipulated. Oh, yeah. Somebody's like, you know, that's how we'll
paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah, $10.
Oh, yeah, that's why you're on the phone with him.
And I was stunned. I was like, $10? Why is it so inexpensive?
Poor Aaron.
And what I did do before I bought it was to see if there was any what the language options were, because I thought I'd read something online that said that it, you know, that there was no there were no English subtitles. Apparently,
it's Toho policy that, you know, like if you want that, if you're like, I can't wait, I'm gonna buy the import, there are no subtitles.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so annoyed that we don't have a date on this yet.
It's kind of odd, and I don't know why, because it's like, don't you want this money?
Yeah, that I am eager to spend.
Well, the longer you wait, the more demand will get driven to the black market, the piracy.
Yeah,
right. The longer absolutely. You wait to give a legal you're method to buy,
sales. You are actively losing sales right now, and that's not to blame people for and that's not to blame, you know, the movie companies for piracy, but knowing piracy is out there, it feels like at least release it digitally.
It didn't like, cost you anything to do that. I don't get that.
So, I don't know. Odd decision. But regardless, when it comes out, it's great. See it. Highly recommended.
I'd just be happy if there was a date. Give me the date.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to get our money. They just need to let us give them our money.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I am aware of people who pirate movies that I know of. And, you know, when I was much younger, I did. I don't even know how to do that shit anymore.
Same.
I mean, I don't even know, and, you know, because I talked to people, I'm like, well, I set up a VPN and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, God damn, like, just buy the shit for $10. Half the movies are free anyway if you have a streaming service or included in the cost of your streaming service. Right. Like, my God. I mean, yeah, of course, you know, 22-year-old Paul would be ashamed of the old man I've become.
Well, you know, it has been a very, very, very long time since I BitTorrented anything. And I don't even know if that's still a thing.
I don't think that's still a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't know. The Pirate Bay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like you said, I don't even know how to do that anymore.
Well, and you know, back in the day, I did a lot of it because movies
they weren't available.
They were not available, right? But nowadays, like Godzilla Minus One notwithstanding, almost everything's available. Like all these, you know, I was big into international horror movies and Japanese horror movies, and that was the only way I was going to get my hands on them. Nowadays, all that stuff's readily available. So it's interesting that, again, Godzilla Minus One, such a, you know, one of the biggest, most talked about releases, you know, of recent, you know, the recent months is being released so oddly.
Yeah. Well, you know, the new Planet of the Apes movie came out this week.
And I really want to see it.
I have not been to see it yet, but I listened to a review yesterday, and the reviewer said, you know, it was entertaining, but it was kind of like, you know, when you go to the bar and you get a plate of nachos, and the nachos are good, but you don't think about the nachos after, you know, it's just you ate it and it's done and you move on. And literally for the rest of the day, I kept thinking, fuck, I want nachos. Well, I need nachos. And you know what I did? Had nachos, and I'm still thinking about the nachos. He inadvertently gave it the best review he possibly could. Because I'm like, I need nachos again today.
It's like ube.
Just like that, Paul.
You know, it's funny because every review I've read about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is similar. It's that it's great. But it's not the emotional roller coasters that the Matt Reeves Planet of the Apes movies were, which for what it's worth, I'm good with, because as much as I love the last two Planet of the Apes movies, they're hard to watch, you know,
because they're rough, they're challenging.
I don't know. I find them like, you know, they're just highly emotional stories. You know, they're so sad. The apes die. You know, it's like, oh, this is really. And I'm actually going to have a similar conversation about something later on. You know, it's. I just find them hard to rewatch because they're just so gut wrenching. That's probably a good term.
I need my ape movies to make me think afterwards. So these reviews are not really promising for me, but it's an ape movie, so I'm going to go see it this weekend because
I love the Matt Reeves movies. I just find them, you know, like they're so sad, and I like happy movies, happy things. Yeah. Well, since we're talking about movie news, since the last time we podcasted, gentlemen, James Gunn has released a first image, official image, of his new Superman.
And I bet
tying his shoes or putting on his boots.
I bet it resonated so strongly with you, Paul.
You know, I think about and obviously we don't need to go into a Snyder conversation here, but I feel like the first image of the last few Supermen. So I'll make it about the last few Supermen. I won't make it just about Cavill. But the, you know, the first image released of Tyler Hoechlin.
Yeah.
The first image released of Henry Cavill have all been very heroic in nature. Like Henry Cavill, the first shot, you know, was him slammed up against the bank vault, you know, like mid battle. The first one of Tyler Hoechlin, I believe, was him like flying in the clouds, looking, you know, majestic with the sun behind him.
Yeah, even back to Brandon Routh, his first one was him standing in front of like a bank vault door with bullets bouncing off him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All very, you know, like Superman iconic images. And this one, I was like, I don't know about that. You know, I'm like, if this is the vibe that they want to go for the Superman film, it instantly struck me as comedic. Iconic.
Apparently he took this picture on set while the actor was actually suiting up, and he for some reason thought that was a good one to release. Now, like, I'm a James Gunn guy, but this was not a good way to present your costume for the first time. A very casual putting on the boots while the city's being destroyed in the background. I kind of like some things about the costume, but
yeah, it's got the red trunks. You can see the red trunks. I like the red trunks. I don't mind the Superman symbol itself.
But I would have rather seen him in. Yeah, I would have rather seen him in a pose.
Yeah, I don't know about the mock turtleneck. You know, the Jim Lee mock turtleneck aspect of it. But
I thought you would have enjoyed how it leaned into, you know, Superman's fascination with shoes, Paul.
I mean, obviously. If you know, he's the emphasis of the shoes.
I love the someone took that picture and put him sitting on a bench in like a Foot Locker, and it was marvelous.
Yes.
It reminds me of Captain Kirk, how, you know, the shorthand for Captain Kirk just had sex with the lady was him pulling on his boot, you know, afterwards. And I'm just like, oh yeah, yeah, Superman just got busy.
That's why
he's casually like, you know, I gotta go save the world. But, you know, he's taking his time because he's still afterglowing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I hold out hope. I'm not one of those James Gunn haters just because I'm a Snyder guy. But it is not the first image I would have chosen.
I think it's fine.
Whatever, Aaron. You don't know things.
I think it's fine. It doesn't show Superman in a hero pose, but it does kind of show Superman as an ordinary guy. And I think that's kind of the vibe that James Gunn's going for. So I think it was kind of a purposeful release because it, you know, it shows that Superman's just folks.
I found it underwhelming.
Well,
so I find three out of four people, Aaron.
Like, I didn't look at it and be like, oh yeah, I cannot wait for this movie. I was like, huh, yeah, that's Superman putting on a boot. Okay.
Well, you know, it's the first image. We'll see how subsequent images and subsequent releases. I mean, the film's not coming out until next year, right? So
once we finally see a movie trailer with some 80s song that gets us pumped up, then we'll know.
Yeah, some 80s song while Superman's it'll literally just be like a minute and a half of Superman getting dressed while the city behind him is destroyed, set to some 80s music.
And then it'll just be Crash Superman. Test Dummies, you know?
Yeah. Butthole Surfers.
No, Superman never made any money saving the world from Solomon Grundy. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
There you go. There you go. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's not right. Really. Well, next up in media, you know, news is that speaking of first images, the first official images were released this week of the upcoming Batman Caped Crusader series. Now, as a reminder, Batman Caped Crusader is a new animated series that teams up Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, and, hey, Planet of the Apes, Matt Reeves, that was originally being produced for HBO Max before it became Max. And then with the acquisition of Discovery and all that stuff and looking to save money, they scrapped it. They're like, nah, we're good. But Amazon Prime Video bought it, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
That now Amazon Prime is going to have this highly anticipated series just because Max is like, we're good. Because
Max doesn't understand what they have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't think the series itself is going to be good, the names attached are going to print you money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I believe the entire series drops at once on August 1st, and is like set in the 1940s. So it's like, it's which, you know, kind of is like the original Batman, the animated series kind of vibe, you know, redesigns all the characters to, you know, kind of that era of their appearance. I think as much as I appreciate Bruce Timm's designs, I think him absent Paul Dini is not as strong. But with J.J. Abrams and Matt Reeves there, it's a strong pedigree.
I don't know about the J.J. Abrams part of it.
I like J.J.
I think J.J.'s fine. I don't know that he I will be surprised to see what he brings to this.
He's going
to
bring Slurm. Slurm is going to be in every episode. Someone or something named Kelvin will be referenced in every episode. And then we're going to get a viral marketing campaign. It's already started. You don't even know.
So this is actually part of the viral marketing campaign, Aaron. You don't even know.
Ube is part of the viral marketing campaign.
That's what this whole show is. It's just a series of viral marketing campaigns. But do you think with it being animated, how much lens flare do you think we're going to get with it?
Oh, it's going to be a lot of lens flare.
Yeah.
Animated lens flare?
Yeah. Animated lens flare.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm looking forward to it. We will talk about it when it releases in August.
I'm looking forward to it.
And, you know, in casting news, before, you know, there's casting news that's on the agenda. But I'm gonna slap some breaking casting news at these folks on the podcast. It just popped up in my news feed.
Uh-oh.
That Sigourney Weaver is in talks to join the new Star Wars movie, The Mandalorian and Grogu.
That doesn't mean anything.
As it what? Everything. As who?
I don't know. She's gonna go for the trifecta. Alien.
I'm in talks.
And Andrew, to answer your question, she's in talks to play Sigourney Weaver. They'll give her another name, but
yeah,
at this point in her career, she plays Sigourney Weaver.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I mean, is she going to be, you know, honestly, when they had that crazy mechanic on Tatooine with the little droids that the Mandalorian goes to.
Amy Sedaris.
I really felt like that was Amy Sedaris was channeling her own kind of Sigourney Weaver. So I feel like channeling, you know, having Sigourney Weaver and Amy Sedaris playing that character on the same screen at the same time could be a little too much.
If she could just be Ripley, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Ripley's been frozen.
Crossing over.
Yeah, I like it. Speaking of which, my Instagram keeps getting clogged up with some Aliens Expanded thing that James Cameron is selling. Have you guys seen this?
I have not.
Go ahead.
Apparently it's some kind of crowdfunding thing, and I'm like, why does James Cameron need me to crowdfund something?
Right.
But, you know, you're going to get your name in the credits. I don't know exactly what it is because I'm not interested enough to watch the whole video. But, I mean, it shows up in my Instagram daily these days.
Hmm.
Paul, hey, I assume you're getting targeted with that as well.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I don't remember exactly what it is. Yeah. And I don't even – it's one of those things that – is he actually producing it or did they just get him to
be to part answer. Of it? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's the ultimate companion. It's Aliens Expanded, which is a new documentary about aliens specifically. It's the ultimate. I just looked it up. The ultimate companion to James Cameron's Aliens, packed with stories and insights from the original cast of crew. Order by May 13th to get your name in the credits and exclusive merchandise. Digital delivery June 24th. Physical delivery July 2024. And it's got like all of the original cast. It is. I don't know that it's worth $49.
Yeah, it's
digitally.
Crazy.
It is not. No.
But if you're interested in looking into it, it's aliens-expanded.com. See, we are just nothing but a viral marketing campaign on this podcast.
And now we see a multi-tiered marketing scheme to funnel these people into.
Is there an Ube version of that?
You know, I'm sure we're doing $49. This. We're doing this whole viral marketing thing wrong since we're not being paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. We've been doing it wrong for the last 14 years.
This is why they co-opt podcasters.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Because we're cheap.
We're just hoping that someone famous wants to buy us at some point. That's really all. At this point, that's all we're in it for. That someone with a podcast conglomerate.
Disney Plus will buy us at some point. And,
or what is that? Smartless. Smartless Productions will listen and acquire us, and now we'll be owned by Jason Bateman. Really, that's, I think, all we're hoping for at this point.
Netflix will do a remake.
it'll be better. It'll have better production values. But at least I won't have to edit it anymore.
No, we'll keep you on as editor, Paul.
Unpaid editor, too.
That's right.
Unpaid editor. That's right. Intern. He's our intern. So in the last bit of moving news before we talk about comic books this week is they have announced some casting news for the upcoming Fantastic Four film. We've already talked about Julia Garner from Ozark as Silver Surfer. They have also announced that Ralph Ineson from The Witch and Game of Thrones. He's also been in the Harry Potter movies. He was in the recent First Omen movie.
The Willow reboot.
Was he in Game of Thrones?
I do not know because I did not see Game of Thrones. Okay. But he was also in The Creator, which released last year. The Northman. He's in the upcoming Nosferatu remake. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff. And he's got a very distinctive look. But he's been cast as Galactus.
He seems a little short for Galactus.
Anyone 300 feet tall will probably be a little short for Galactus.
We know that Galactus is not going to look that much like Ralph Emerson, probably.
No.
I've got no idea who this guy is, but a friend of mine that does know him says he has the perfect voice for the role.
That's what I was thinking. It's probably more about his voice than his looks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's fine. You know, obviously, I've seen some of those things that they reference, but I'm not as intimately familiar with him. But they also announced that Paul Walter Hauser will be joining the movie in an undisclosed role. Paul Walter Hauser has been in things like He was in Cobra Kai. He was in the Clint Eastwood movie about the guy who was accused of being a bomber or something like that. The name escapes me right now. But he's been in I, Tonya, Black Klansman, The Five Bloods. Richard Jewell is the movie I was thinking of.
My question is, who's John Malkovich going to play in the Fantastic Four movie?
And John Malkovich has been cast in it. So
I love me some John Malkovich.
Willie Lumpkin, the postman.
So we'll get a creepy maybe. Willie Lumpkin?
Exactly, with his wiggling ears.
I think people are, you know, anticipating that Paul Walter Hauser could be Mole Man or Herbie. John Malkovich could.
I was actually thinking, how funny would it be if Malkovich was just the voice of Herbie?
He may be.
Well, in my other question, because I don't know if I realized this before I read this article, I probably missed it, but this is set in the 1960s.
Yes. At least part of it is, yes.
Yeah, so this would take place in the MCU before. This would be the earliest movie set in the MCU timeline.
No, Captain America would be the earliest set.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, no, good point.
Yeah, no. My prediction has been since we saw those first images that it's going to start in the 60s. They're going to space, but they won't come back until modern day.
That's my thought as well.
That as far as the world knows, these people disappeared when they went to space. Mm.
It could be. That could be. But, you know, they would. I assume there would be something that happened while they're in space that kept them from aging, you know, 50 years.
Well, I think they time warp or something.
Yeah. Okay. Relativity. Yeah. They travel close to the speed of light, and that's what does it.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, that's our theory.
That's a good theory, because I really hope the whole thing does not take place in the 60s.
You know, I don't have a problem with it taking place in the 60s, but I do want the FF in present day.
Yeah, and I want them the age that the actors are in present day.
Right. And yeah. I think that it allows them to have that, you know, 60s nuclear family aesthetic, but to carry it forward as fish out of water in present day. I mean, I really like that notion. I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to Fantastic Four. Though I think Paul would be a better casting for Galactus, because just imagine Galactus looming large over New York City going, "Peeps!"
Yeah, well, I just think how you could focus in on putting on the shoes.
That's right.
Right.
That's what I need someone.
First image of Galactus is me putting on the boots.
That's my new sneakers.
I need a leaked image from Fantastic Four this summer of Galactus sitting on a bench putting on his shoes.
Sitting on a planet.
Yeah, Galactus has his own YouTube channel, you know.
Yeah, I like it. Now that's the movie that I want to see.
That's right.
Well, you know, guys, this week I went to an actual comic book store. That's, you know, Brick Mort. I know, and I didn't get there until Friday. So unfortunately, you know, I rolled in a couple titles I was looking for had already been sold out. So, you know, I picked up the ones that were available.
But they're not sold out, Andrew.
Where's that?
Comixology.
I mean, yeah, if I wanted to go back to that relationship, I could do that, but I'm better than that. So, I, you know, walked up to the front. The nice guy who was usually there was checking me. I think he's one of the owners, is my understanding. And, I was like, "Hey, I was looking for Dracula number one for Bloodhunt. Do you guys have any left? I didn't see on the racks." He's like, "Oh no, we sold out." And his exact words were, "Bloodhunt's been a lot more popular than we thought it would be."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a lot more popular on this podcast than I thought it was going to be, frankly.
And then he went on to say, then we wanted to talk about what's going on with Thor, because he's like, "I'm trying to figure out what they're doing with Thor." So then we had that discussion. So
yeah, I feel like you had a whole other podcast without us, Andrew. I mean, you cheated on us and had a comic book conversation with someone else.
I mean, I just want to point out that Marvel did a viral marketing campaign by having Aaron read us the the blurb for Bloodhunt, and that's what got us all into it.
It really did. It was not on my radar until Aaron was complaining about it, and then I was
same
like,
here.
Okay. I'm so glad I did.
It is so disturbing to me that I have inadvertently, you know, caused these sales for
Bloodhunt. Not just sales of the initial series, but we also spent our hard-earned cash on these fucking tie-ins, too.
I bought three tie-ins this week.
That is just so disturbing.
Well, to be fair, full disclosure, I don't know how much more money I'll be spending on tie-ins. So let's talk, because I think all of us read the Avengers tie-in, and that one. So I normally have a rule about tie-in books.
Right.
Is that I'll pick up like, and it's honestly inspired by, you know, back in the days of when we started this podcast in Blackest Night, is that, you know, Green Lantern was, you know, Blackest Night was written by Geoff Johns. Green Lantern was also written by Geoff Johns. And so they very much integrated into the story, right? Yes. And so that's why I picked up Avengers number 14, because it is also written by Jed McKay, who is the writer of Blood Hunt. So I'm like, okay, he's writing Avengers. He's also writing this. So let's see, you know, if it's the same writer, let's see how they're tied together.
Well, and so, spoilers, out of the three tie-ins I bought this week, that was it, Avengers is certainly my favorite.
I would agree. Definitely.
Though yeah. I got to say, the cover is beautiful and the interior art is not quite as good. It's not bad. It's just not as good.
That picture of the Shield hover car, flying car, taking off with the giant A hood ornament. Love that.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite pages in this book.
Yeah, and it's actually something in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows something on the cover being in a book?
Right? It's crazy. And it features, I don't know if we want to spoil it, it features on the last page the return of one of my favorite villains of all time.
Yeah, the story in Avengers is, now to be fair, I don't know how much it's tying directly to the books, but it's to the main series. But this is, like I said, by the same writer. And features Captain America basically getting together a team of Avengers.
Some reservists.
Hazmat, Hercules, Quicksilver, and Kate Bishop. Hawkeye. And they come across, and Aaron, you're missing out. They come across Nazi vampires who have taken over a helicarrier. And so this looks like it's very much going to be, you know, the tie-ins are going to be related to that storyline, which
my favorite line of the whole book. Captain America is narrating a lot of this, and he has so many good lines, but my favorite line in the book is, you know, I've met some good vampires, but I've never met a good Nazi.
Yeah. And I gotta say, a lot of times I would say that this book was too heavy with text, but this one is so well written. And so you have different, it's basically inner monologues of the different characters. So there's, in Captain America is the most common, but you have pages where Hazmat's talking about what's going on. Hercules is thinking about it. Quicksilver was great. Kate Bishop. It was so well written that even though usually I'd say there was too much text, I loved it. I enjoyed it so much. And then
I love this team too. I think that they work really well together. And having them tied into the characters that are missing, like Quicksilver, I don't typically like him in a book. I loved him here because he talks about how he's a horrible husband and, you know,
bad father,
jerk and a bad father. But the one person that still loves him is his sister.
Yeah. And then we know what the main Avengers team, we know what's going on with them in the main Blood Hunt book. So this is the story of what some of the reservists are doing while the main team is off doing their thing. And it was great. Like I said, it was of the three books I picked up, tie-in books I picked up, it was by far the best. And I guess, should we say who shows up at the very end?
Sure.
Because I want to ask you a question about it. So Baron Blood shows up to be leading this group of vampire Nazis on this helicarrier. And I assume it has to be the John Fallsworth Baron Blood, right?
It looks like it.
It looks like him. And that was the Nazi Baron Blood.
Yeah,
the
Nazi Baron Blood, yeah.
And I'm curious how he's alive, because last time I'm not an expert, I haven't read as much recently, but last time I know, Captain America had cut his head off and had his body in ashes, like burnt. So I don't know how he's back alive.
It's comics. That's how he's back.
I'm hoping we get a blurb, a one liner at least, explain how he's back.
You know what I love about, what Aaron had when Aaron read us the description last week on the podcast, which you should listen to if you haven't. You know, when I think it was like the bloodiest Marvel event ever, and I think that's one of the things I love about it is that apparently, like, none of the Marvel heroes really have any issue with cutting body parts off of these vampires, cutting heads off, slicing them in half, like just demolishing the vampires. And I'm like, oh, I mean, some of these vampires are just like people who've been infected, right? like, do we need to cut them in half?
There's no coming back, Paul.
Yeah. Well, there's so this actually ties into Amazing Spider-Man. Yes, I'm a glutton for punishment.
So you got Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, did you, or am I the only
one? No, I think you're the only one.
You're the only one.
So in Amazing Spider-Man, the gang leader Rabbit has been infected by – she owns an apartment building. You know, she's like a gang leader, and she owns an apartment building, and she's been bitten by one of her tenants and turned into a vampire. And it's all about how one of her stooges, wants Spider-Man to help him cure her by killing the vampire who infected her. So this is kind of the first reference I've seen that, like, if you have been bitten by a vampire and turned, if you kill the original vampire, you'll be cured. What I found interesting is that in this book, Spider-Man is just so goddamn inconsistent, man. Because it's so horrible half the time and it's really good half the time. Is that the neighbor who bit her is aware of what he is and has handcuffed himself in his apartment, to his radiator so that he can't hurt anybody. And it's about Spider-Man, you know, dealing with the moral dilemma of taking him out versus not. And I won't spoil the ending here. But I was like, wow, like this was actually kind of a deeper book than I expected, you know, than Avengers 14 was, or Bloodhunters number one was. And I actually, John Romita Jr. art, so you've been warned. Yeah. But I actually enjoyed this tie-in issue.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth it. Now, it is not with Amazing Spider-Man, they are taking their tie-ins to a separate miniseries featuring Morbius, just called Spider-Man Blood Hunt. We'll see if I continue into that, but this very much felt like a one-shot. It ends in a cliffhanger, but the main thrust, crux of the storyline pretty much wraps up in one issue. So you're interested, recommend checking it out.
He makes his decision about what he's going to do with the vampiric neighbor by the end of the issue.
I would say I'm trying to be spoiler free for you who haven't read it. That storyline is resolved.
I just want to make sure I can see the end of that plot line without buying another book.
Yes, that storyline is resolved. And I'll spoil the actual ending because the actual cliffhanger is that he runs into Lizard at the end of the issue. Now, the Lizard already has sharp teeth, so I don't know if he's Vampire Lizard or not. But that's the end of the issue. But it's kind of like happenstance. It's not actually tied to the main storyline.
Well, that sounds surprisingly good. A book that I was looking forward to that was not surprisingly good.
It was surprisingly bad.
Was Bloodhunters number one, which is a series of actually three individual stories written by different creative teams. There's one, the first one focuses on Hawkeye, second one focuses on J. Jonah and his son Manwolf, and the third, which I didn't realize his son was Manwolf. And then the third story is in my opinion, the only good story I enjoyed was the one focused on Dagger.
Now, before we get into it, I will say I was disappointed in – as soon as I flipped over to the first – I should have read the preview pages, guys. I've learned my lesson. I thought this was going to – it's called Bloodhunters as if – and it shows three characters on the front as if they are
– a team.
Correct.
Like, this is a bomb-ass team. So that's why I picked the book up. And then as soon as I flipped over to the first page and saw it was an anthology, I'm like – damn it.
Yeah, they it was a bait and switch because I had the same thought. I was like, oh, this is gonna be badass. Hawkeye, Dagger, Manwolf, sweet. And then no.
Now I'm a huge Dagger fan, so I was going in, you know, expecting it to be Dagger putting together a team because of what happened with Cloak. But
yeah,
no, that's not what we got.
No, and honestly, the first two stories are far too comedic. For this plot line, for this, you know, series, like the J. Jonah one is straight up a comedy, I would say.
Yes.
I mean, it attempts to be a comedy. it doesn't land any of its humor. And the shame is I actually like the art in the J. Jonah one. It's just far too comedic.
So that's my issue with the book in general, is it completely fails the tone. This is a serious event, and then both the J. Jonah story and the Hawkeye one are just comedy books.
Well, that's why I like the Dagger one, because it does have that serious tone. It has that kind of part where she recognizes this person she knows who's been turned, and she's trying not to kill him. And then you talked earlier about, you know, heroes having no trouble, you know, eviscerating a vampire. She actually, you know, when she meets someone she recognizes from real life, from her day-to-day life, she does have that kind of hesitation and horror and doesn't want to do what she has to do.
Yeah.
So
I'd say a mixed bag on the tie-ins, really, this week.
Well, I've got one more.
Two out of the three. Oh, you did. What else?
Got one more. So, Bloodhunter's least favorite, Avengers 14 favorite. In between those two was Strange Academy, one of three miniseries, Bloodhunt.
How was that?
Well, I'll say I haven't read any. I guess they called it what, Year One, Season One. I haven't read any Strange Academy since then. But I like it. It starts out with them taking a tour in New Orleans. Of course, nice, creepy place, often associated with vampires in modern American culture. And then, you know, the Dark Force comes, blots out the sky, vampires show up. And it's not as good as Avengers 14, but it's pretty good. Introduces a character that's new to me, at least, named Pia, who has some secrets, of course, because it's Strange Academy. Basically the general plot line is they overhear Dr. Voodoo talking with Strange about how they need the Montesi formula and they need the Darkhold. And they hear this thing about, you know, Scarlet Witch is missing because she's, you know, ingested the Darkhold. And then, but they're like, but we have this other trace out in the woods, outside, you know, Madripoor. And so of course the students in classic fashion are like, well, let's go get it. And so they go off on this quest to find it, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's good. Like I said, not quite as good as Avengers 14, but way, way better than Bloodhunters number one.
Yeah, I saw, you know, the Strange Academy, I saw it, but it wasn't by any of the original creators of it, so I decided, maybe not.
It nothing seemed so out of place to me as far as characterization and how they're portrayed in here. So it was similar enough to me. The art, not as good as the original Strange Academy run, but serviceable. Decent.
For what it's worth, I mean, I think I'm enjoying Bloodhunt. I am, as an overall story. We'll see where it goes in the second issue.
Well,
but I'm clearly invested in it.
Are there any other what's the word I'm looking for? Tie-ins that you guys are thinking about.
I weigh it week to week, frankly. Just depends on what things look like next week. Because next week is what, the 15th? Yeah. So we've got the Spider-Man one. There are less tie-ins, I think, next week. I think Spider-Man Bloodhunt is probably the main one. And I'm just going to... Lesson having been learned, I'm going to review preview pages before I purchase the comic book.
Yeah, like I hadn't planned on picking up the Avengers one, but I read the preview pages and then I remembered that Avengers are kind of the center of the crossover. Right. And I between those two reasons, I went ahead and picked it up.
Well, if you guys who actually can look at preview pages see any that look good, let me know. The only two I'm for sure going to pick up are Union Jack and Midnight Suns. Those are two I'm sure going to pick up. I definitely will pick up
Midnight Suns when that one comes out.
But if you guys see any others that look good, let me know. Oh, and I guess one other question. Is there everyone's planning on picking up Avengers 15 then when it comes out?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone going to pick up Bloodhunters number two?
No.
Well, I am going to get Strange Academy too when it comes out. It's a three issue. That's not too much of a commitment. I want to see where it goes with this new character.
Okay.
You know, last week was Free Comic Book Day.
Yes, sir.
And I have to say that the free comic book issues that I read digitally, because I didn't get out to a comic book shop, are some of the best Free Comic Book Day books I've read in years.
I don't disagree, honestly.
Yeah. And I have to say, it was available on Wednesday this week. I read Free Comic Book Day, Bloodhunt number one.
Yeah, let's talk about an event book that Aaron is actually going to pick up.
well,
the upcoming Howard verse crossover.
Yeah, you know, the Conan the Barbarian Battle of the Black Stone, which is being printed through Heroic Signatures and Titan Comics. They currently have the license from Conan Properties International, I believe is the name of the holding company. Mm-hmm. But I have really enjoyed the current run of Savage Sword of Conan. It's an anthology book. I think I talked a little bit about it a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. It's the page counts are running anywhere between 85 and 60 pages. They are fantastic. In fact, there is a Solomon Kane serialized story there that is just outstanding. It's all black and white, but the artwork is exquisite. It reminds me so much of the old, you know, black and white Savage Sword of Conan magazine sized books. Reminds me of that era of Epic Illustrated. These are just gorgeous, heavy metal like illustrated books. They're just fantastic. And the stories.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the stories are great, but the Free Comic Book Day issue is more of a traditional comic book. It's four color. It's, you know, paced like a true comic. And what's great about this book is that it is, number one, setting up the Howard verse, Robert E. Howard verse event that's going to start in the fall. And it's using all of these great Robert E. Howard characters. So, you know, you've got, you know, Conan, you've got Brissa and Solomon Kane and El Borak and Professor John Kirwan. And I mean, just all these different Robert E. Howard characters. And the book has got some terrific action in it. And I think it's a really nice teaser for the book in the fall. Paul, you read it. What did you think?
I did read it. So just Andrew, did either of you read this book?
No. Okay. I had to pick my four, it did not make the cut. But I was very interested in that, and the Flash Gordon one both.
The one thing that I will say is, for those of you who read some of those D&D comics from, I think it was IDW, it's written by Jim Zub.
Oh yeah.
The Conan books. I mean, the Savage Sword is a an anthology, but they have a main Conan title that I believe is, you know, has been published for a year now, and none of us have been reading it. Is written by Jim Zub, and very much, very much in the classic Marvel style. Like even the letters page, the credits page is like Grim Jim Zub, Ravaging Rob De La Torre on art, you know, stuff like that. So they're calling back to that classic Marvel publishing style of Conan. So I just picked up the first issues of both titles because the Free Comic Book Day issue I loved. I'm a fan of Conan. I love Solomon Kane as well. I am a little less familiar with some of the other characters in the Robert E. Howard verse. You know, I think I've heard of some of them. I have not read all the titles and, you know, but I love how they are. But, you know, and it's called the Howard verse legitimately. The stories were loosely tied together even when he wrote them. Right. Well, so it's not like they're taking things that weren't tied together and tying them together just by nature of the writer. They were tied together even when he wrote them.
And part of what's built into the Robert E. Howard stories is that Conan is the original, you know, character in the timeline, the earliest character in the timeline, I should say. But, you know, he is reincarnated through the ages in the form of Kull the Conqueror and Solomon Kane. Mm-hmm. And what I did note, you know, because they kind of have the list of characters that are going to be involved in the crossover. I noticed Kull isn't noted here.
I did notice that, and I'm wondering if it's a rights thing. They mention him in the text, but they don't show him the art. And I'm just wondering if it's a rights thing.
I don't know.
So Solomon Kane is a reincarnation of Conan?
Yep.
I never knew that.
Yeah. And, I, you know, I'm fascinated by what they're doing here, such that I watched the Solomon Kane movie last night when
which is included in Amazon in your Prime Video account. If you
have it Amazon is Prime. It is. Yeah. I didn't have to pay for it like I had to pay for minus one. but I'd never seen it before with James Purefoy. It's a really good movie.
It actually is. It is surprisingly good. I'll be traveling this week, and while we were talking about it, I'm like, you know what? That'll be good plane watching. So I downloaded it.
Yeah, no, I very much enjoyed the Free Comic Book Day book. I very much have enjoyed the Savage Sword of Conan series that's coming out every other month. Issue 3 is not out yet. But they're just terrific. If you've got any kind of interest in Robert E. Howard or Conan, I really recommend picking it up.
It's just one of those things that, when Marvel published Conan, I really did enjoy Jason Aaron's arc in the book. And he also wrote the King Conan, conclusion. And I read that, and it was, it didn't quite stick the landing as I had hoped.
Right.
But I enjoyed what Marvel did with Conan, other than his integration into Dark Avengers Savage Avengers.
Savage Avengers.
It just didn't feel like Conan fit within the context of that storyline. But I like that unlike Marvel, and I think Dynamite had the Conan license before, and so they had some integration. But I've not seen anyone integrate as many characters from the Howardverse as this one seems to. So I'm really interested in that.
You know what's funny is that they have very much emulated the Marvel style as developed by Roy Thomas back in the day. And, I feel like they've done a much more effective job at leaning into that and then also modernizing it than Marvel did with Jason Aaron. Because while I enjoyed the Jason Aaron books, I think these Jim Zub books are better. I mean, I intensely entertained. I thought I was delighted to read these stories, and I finished it and I immediately went and bought the second one. And I was frustrated that the third one's not out yet because I was like, God, these are fantastic. I mean, the backup stories are great, and so many times you buy an anthology book and the lead story is the good one and everything else is kind of crap. But the stories are great. There's pinup art in the books. I mean, there is just so much talent and creativity, being breathed in to Conan and Solomon Kane and the other characters in the Robert E. Howard verse. Just fantastic storytelling.
Agreed. So in the time that we've been talking on this podcast, I've purchased Conan the Barbarian number one and Savage Sword of Conan, and I'm looking forward to hopping back into the Howardverse leading up to the Battle for the Blackstone. Again, Free Comic Book Day issue. It is available digitally for free as well right now. And it got me interested in Conan again. So I'm gonna hop in and try to get caught up in time for the big epic event later this year.
Very good.
But,
well, another book that I'm not reading is the Transformers book. I know that the Energon Universe was a Free Comic Book Day book.
And it killed us last week to not talk about it in detail because Wayne hadn't read it, but Andrew and I had. And I'm like, damn it. but it is available. So, Aaron, I'm assuming – I'm going to make a wild assumption here that even though it was free, you still didn't pick it up.
That is correct. it's not that I'm hating
it's not your
on
jam.
It. I'm,
it's not your jam. I get
it's
it.
Not my jam. Yeah.
But you are very much into the G.I. Joe, right, Aaron?
No,
you're not into that either. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
All right. I'll give you a pass then.
Yeah. But we're heading into year two of the Energon universe. And Wayne, I know you were able to finally read the Free Comic Book Day issue, which that first story was the Transformer story. The Transformers Avoid Rivals, which is essentially also a Transformer story and a G.I. Joe story. But the first one, the Transformer story, Wayne, what did you think?
The whole book was incredible for me. The first Transformer story, seeing what happened on the Ark as it's reaching Earth and having that fight between Optimus and Megatron that basically set all the prequel stuff for the series, where we've been wondering, how did Optimus get Megatron's arm? You know, how did Starscream end up in charge? All of that was just incredible. Then the second story, even though it was a Void Rival story, it's going to make me buy some Void Rivals books, because Hot Rod, one of my favorite Transformers, is large and in charge in this one. He is badass in just his personality. And then wrap it all up with a putting the team together story for G.I. Joe. And again, G.I. Joe was never my thing growing up, so I don't know these characters. But I loved how they're recruiting her, and the whole aspect of, you know, there's going to be two teams, not just one.
Well, and I love Flint and Lady J, so seeing them show up at the end there was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I have a question for our resident Transformers expert. So is this whole forming weapons out of energy, like Optimus does with the axe, and then Megatron does with the like flail, is that something that's been a thing for a while?
Yeah, it's not something all of them can do, but Optimus and Megatron have been able to do it at least back to the G1 cartoon series.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That was new to me. Did you like when Starscream, turned on Megatron?
Oh, it was great. It was pure Starscream. And this Starscream is vicious and a little more competent than the original cartoon one.
Yeah, I'm not a huge lore of the Transformers, but when he did that, I was like, oh, that's so cool. He took his chance. He took a shot. And it's kind of working out for him, I guess.
Well, and, not, you know, so much lately.
Well, yeah. We'll get to Transformers 8 here in a minute, I suppose.
Well, I guess we can talk about it now, because I wanted to talk about Transformers 8. We haven't talked about the last few issues of Transformers, because it's like, what else new do we have to say?
I got a lot of new to say on this one.
Yeah, and then Transformers 8 comes out, and Wayne, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so there is so much going on in this book that is. It's a bit of a down issue, as in a between
story. And that's the thing with the stuff with Jetfire. I was like, oh, you mean down? I meant down like sad.
Oh, it is that. It's very much that, too.
Yeah, I think I'm ready for some hope in this book. As much as I'm loving it, I'm ready for things to start going good for the good guys.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a between the arc storyline. Mm-hmm. But it's giving us a chance to have the emotional impact of the last arc. We're seeing how you've got a little bit of survivor's guilt in Spike. Spike's dealing with the loss of his father. You've got anger towards Cliffjumper for not killing Starscream, and the basically how angry she is.
Yeah, Carly.
Carly, how angry she is about that, and how she wants to take the fight to them. You see, have this incredible scene on Cybertron with Alita One, and no idea who that is with Alita One, because he's so banged up that we can't even tell who it is. You get to see little aspects of things like Thundercracker in the old Marvel comics at one point teams up with G.I. Joe and has sympathy for humans, and it's something that they've written into the character over the years. We get to see little aspects of that in the book. But then you just get this. It is a war. They've all lost people. You see some of the things that they've lost over the years. And it's just heartbreaking what happened to Jetfire. They've brought him back because they need a vehicle. He can't transform. He is just a plane.
He can't even fly himself. He can't see.
Yeah, he can't see anything. He's just transportation to him. And he even asked that. Is that all I am to you now? It's just so heartbreaking.
That was so sad. It was so sad. Why? Yeah. Why are you making me sad, Transformers comic book? Why?
But then we get something that makes me happy, and that's one of my favorite characters is in here.
Oh, at the ending? Last page?
No, not the last page. I'm a huge fan of Astrotrain.
Yeah.
Oh, Astrotrain.
Yeah, well, I love seeing Astrotrain.
I like how Soul Train.
Yeah, exactly like that. I do like how Astro Train, when he comes out, decides to beat the living snot out of Thundercracker instead of and just leave Soundwave alone. just wailing on Thunder. Soundwave just stand up the side like, yeah, I'm just gonna stand over here while you get your anger out on the other guy. He just beats him brutally. And then who's that person on the last page when they make their connection there? Who's on the vid?
That's Shockwave.
Yeah, that's Shockwave. Okay.
Yeah, no, Shockwave is typically the one left in charge on Cybertron when they come to Earth. So they're making contact to call in reinforcements.
Yeah, Shockwave is he's just as big a bad guy as Megatron, really. It's just Megatron's the iconic one.
Yeah, he's their super scientist as well. Like, Megatron's the fighter. Shockwave is tough, but Shockwave is the one that will do experiments and create things to go after you.
Gotcha. And you were asking earlier, you were talking about who that defeated the very beat up, you gotta help me, Autobot that Lita One was carrying.
Yeah.
I think that was Ultra Magus. Because she references, she references earlier that that's what the two of them used to be, right? When she's becoming the Iron Apprentice with Carly. And she refers to him is that a different RC. One than a leader one?
Yeah, that's RC. Oh, yeah, you're right. That.
Sorry. RC to me looks a little bit like a leader one, but you're right.
A little bit.
No, I'm flipping back and forth. I see it.
They're a different character. Because that's modern day on Cybertron is what I took out of it. Alita One is still on Cybertron fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of my impression too. But I guess we'll find out. I'm sure they're setting it up.
Yeah, she is. They are really building her character with this too. Because they have those conversations of, I've been tortured for 1,000 years. Just kill me.
Right. Yeah. And she's like, well, no, but if we get captured, then yes.
Yeah.
If there's still hope, I'm not going to kill you. But if we get captured, I'm saving 2 bullets for us.
Yeah, it's like this whole book is just so emotionally hitting.
It is.
The way they're telling these stories and you're getting the impact on them. I'm kind of with you, Paul, though. I want a little bit more hope here. I want some more repairs. I want to get, Teletran 1 fixing some people.
Yeah, exactly. I'm ready for things to start turning around for the good guys. We're 8 issues in and it's still very, very much dour for them. So fingers crossed.
I like when Carly's talking to RC and she's like, you're all so huge and powerful. How come you don't act like it? It's like, just like, oh my God. It's so depressing.
Yeah, I love that Carly's character, though. I mean, she has gone through an arc since the beginning of the book. Yeah. And it is really, at this point, it's the anger is there. She's still going through all the grief of losing everybody that she's ever cared about.
Yeah, so it continues to be a great book. So I guess we will see. We'll see where it goes in year two of the Energon universe.
It needed this issue, though. It's been go, go, go the entire series. And it needed an issue to have that emotional impact.
Yeah, I can see that.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week in comic shops, we have the newest issue of Action Comics continuing The House of Brainiac. And that's from DC Comics. From Image Comics, we get the second issue of Redcoat issue 2 from Jeff Johns and Brian Hitch. Nice. We also get the collection of Universal Monsters Dracula, which was written by James Tynion with art by Martin Simmons. It's an officially licensed.
Did you read the Creature from the Black Lagoon book?
I read the first issue.
Okay.
And it wasn't bad.
I've read it.
Yeah, I'm going to check out, but now that Dracula's being released, collected, I'll give it a read. And for Marvel Comic, like I already mentioned, we're getting Amazing Spider-Man, Blood Hunt, #1. We're also getting the latest issue of Ultimate X-Men and the first issue of Doom from Jonathan Hickman and Sanford Green.
Is that an Ultimate book?
It is not. I don't know if it's like a one-shot or a miniseries.
Is it a
Oh, it's a giant-sized one-shot. I'm sorry.
Mm. Interesting.
Because that was an interesting. I did enjoy in Blood Hunt number one where you got to see a picture of the borders of Latveria.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think this is related to Blood Hunt at all. I think this is just like a one shot of what Jonathan Hickman wanted to write, a book about Doctor Doom that Jonathan Hickman wanted to write.
Fair.
Well, you know me, I loves me some Doctor Doom.
So. Yep. Heck yeah.
And some Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. We also want to know what you think about Ube Pretzels. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, looking forward to chatting comics with you next week, guys.
Yeah.
And we can share more frustration about Godzilla Minus One.
Maybe we'll have an announcement by then.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Yeah.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.